Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. You know, this question on Murti is something that we usually memorize. So I thought every time we'll chant it from the beginning, just so that you can get the tune, and then if you want to really learn it, you can. But at least you know how to chant it. And this, we usually start with this prayer verse, the Mount of Yakya. So just repeat after me, and after, you know, by the time we're done with this, you'll at least know how to chant it. So I'll do it a section at a time and just repeat. Om Manavyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam. Om Manavyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam. Varashishtante Vasadvrishikanayi Avratam Brahmanishtai. Varashishtante Vasadvrishikanayi Avritam Brahmanishtai Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudram Anandamurtim. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudram Anandamurtim. Swatma Ramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshina Murtimide. Swatma Ramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari. Tulyam nijantargatam. Tulyam nijantargatam. Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivut. Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivut bhutam yatha nidraya. Bhutam yatha nidraya. Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanam eva dvayam. Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanam eva dvayam. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Vijasyantari Vankaro Jagadidam Swamir Vikalpam Punaha. Bijasyantari vankaro jagadidam pramir vikalpam punaha. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vaichitri chitri kritam. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vaichitri chitri kritam. Maya viva vijimba yatyapi maha yogi vayasvechaya. Maya viva vijrimba yatyapi maha yogi vayasvechaya. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Yasyaiva spuranam sadatmakam asat kalpartakam bhasate sakshat tattvam asiti veda vachasa. Sakshatatvamasiti veda vachasa yopodayatyashvitam. Yitzhak Shat Karanat Pavin Punara Vritir Pavam Punidao. Yitzhak Shat Karanat Pavin Punara Vritir Pavam Punidao. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam. Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam. Shri Dakshinamurtaye.
This is where we left off. We used to chant this every day before the, when Swamiji, the Brahma Sutras, at the end of, you know, the very last course that he did, he taught this in the near the beginning. I mean, halfway through. But then at the end, this is part that we would always memorize this and chant it. Because it's written by Shankaracharya. And each verse is kind of a complete vision in itself. So it's a beautiful text. It has a nice raga, you know. So let's do the sandhi. Yasya eva spuranam sad, so sat atmakam asat kalpa artha gam. So asat kalpa artha gam basate sakshat tat tvam asi iti Veda Vajasa Yogodhyati Ashritan Yet Sakshat Karanat Yet Sakshat Karanat Bhavet Na Punar Avritihi Bhava Ambo Nidau Bhava Ambo Nidau Tasmai Shri Guru Murtiye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtiye. You don't have it, do you? Don't have one? Mine. Give this there.
There was, kitchen table. There was one on the kitchen table.
Was there one?
Yeah. Go check and see. Maybe somebody got it.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yasyai vaspuranam sadatmakam asat kalpartakam basate sakshat tattvam asiti veda vachasa yo bodhayatyashritam yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir pavam punidau tasmai shri guru murtaye namidam shri dakshina murtaye. Yasya eva. Yasya is whose, for whom. Yasya. Whose spuranam. Spuranam means consciousness. Take just as consciousness or awareness. Spuranam. Spuranam. Consciousness. Whose consciousness. That for whom is the awareness of whom. The consciousness of whom. Sadatmakam. Whose. When it says atmakam at the end of a compound, sadatmakam, means whose nature is sat. Consciousness, awareness, which is sat, which is awareness, which is existence, sat chit ananda, right? The sat conscious, the existence itself is consciousness. So we're talking about here the nature of the atma, the nature of the self. So for whom the conscious consciousness, which is existence, spuranam sadatmakam, basate, shines. Having asat kalpartagam, having gone into. When you have that gum, it means it has gone into. And so the end of a compound, like gum gachati, it's gone into, or it's residing in, or situated in. So the sat chit, which is there, having gone into, in a sense, having gone into, the artha, the objects, all of the rupas, namarupas. Namarupa means name and form. When we're talking about this maya, the whole manifest creation, the manifest creation of duality, sometimes we'll just refer to the maya as namarupa. Rupa means form, nama means name. So if we say namarupa, it means all of the names and forms in the creation. So the artha, these objects, the arthas are the objects that we experience. these objects, which are made of, which are have for their nature, kopa, which have for their nature, asat. Means they're not, they have no reality of their own. They're asat. Sat means existence. Asat, non-existence. It's not an absolute non-existence. It's the existence of, it's the existence that we call mitya. So let me, I'll talk about that for a minute. So here it says, whose spudanam and sadatmakam, the sat chit, the consciousness which is existence itself, that shines having entered into or having been situated in or existing in all of these objects that we perceive, all of the nama-rupas, all of the things that we perceive in this creation, which are themselves a sat. And so it's an important thing to understand in Vedanta when we're reading the Shastra. If we're talking about things that we experience and we call them a sat, means non-existent. Non-existence means not having sat, not having existence. That is not the same as non-existent. It's not the same as non-existent because we're experiencing them. So when you call something a sat, you have for the meaning of a sat either mitya. Mitya means that which is there but depends on sat itself, existence itself, for its being. That's what we call mitya. Mitya means it cannot be defined. And the whole creation falls under this category. It can't be defined as sat in the terms of paramarthika satyam. Paramarthika satyam means absolute reality. Nothing in this creation, you can say, really exists. Because you can't, first of all, there's many reasons for that. First, you can't find anything here. If you try to find a thing in the creation, you can't find it. Because everything in the creation is infinitely divisible. And so all you experience here are conglomerates. That's why Swamiji never even uses the word rupa anymore. He just says nama. He says all of this we experience, they're only names within names within names within names. Right? Because there's no thing. So for instance, we call this a lamp, but this lamp then is really, you know, the knob and the pole and the base and the filament and the paint. So names within names within names. Right? And so here, when we're experiencing this, so that's one thing. You can't find a thing here. Second thing is that everything that you experience comes into being and goes out of being, which has birth and death, every single thing. Change is birth and death. Right? Anything that changes means it's the death of the prior condition and the birth of the new one. So change and birth and death go together. They're the same thing, really. You know, we usually refer to birth and death in terms of the body, but really there's a birth and death of every single moment. Now the problem with change, any change, the problem with birth and death is that whatever is born comes into being. Right? It comes into being. It means it wasn't there before. So its prior condition is non-existent. And anything that goes out of being, its posterior condition is non-existent. And so whatever that is, that comes, what anything that comes into being and goes out of being is bordered by non-existence, which means that that thing can't have any being in between. You can't have non-existence come into being, come into existence, because non-existence isn't there. Right? So something from nothing can come from non-existence to exist and then go back into non-existence. It can't happen. And yet everything in the creation comes into being and goes out of being. Right? Because of change. So then you have to figure out, well, if that's the case, then these things are experienced. What is the underlying being? Because nothing can come out of non-existence. So what is the underlying reality there of all of these things? And so we use the clay pot example. Right? If a pot comes into being and goes out of being, say a pot turns into a plate, the pot no longer exists, it's gone. And before you made the pot, it wasn't there. But what was there is clay. Right? Clay doesn't come into being and go out of being. So we say the clay is the paramarthika satyam in terms of this example. Clay is what is actually there. Clay is what's real. The building up of the pot, you know, is mitya. We say mitya. We can't say non-existent because there's the pot. We're experiencing the pot. But the pot has no reality apart from clay. And so here we will say the pot is asat. It's not existent. The pot is not existent, but it is there to be experienced because it depends on something which is existent for its being. So we can experience it even though it has no being of its own, right? And so we view the entire creation like that because you can't find a thing and there's no arta here, there's no thing here, there's only names within names. And everything is subject to change, and so you can't find, since it's bordered by non-existence, you can't say that it has any reality of its own. If it's here, it has to be dependent on something which does exist. So that's basically the nature of the creation. There's all kinds of arguments we can get into, you know, to just analyze, and like for each one of those two, I could do a whole class on it, just so that we can kind of sit and do a little dance in that. In that particular unfoldment, so that you can really understand to say, because for us, because we're made of the same material, the same mitya material as the rest of the creation, and we are so real, we are so real that we don't understand that we also are simply asat. Means this body, mind, sense organs, this here. It's just names within names within names within. I call it a body, but I can then break that into hands and legs and arms, you know. It just breaks into more and more and more names as we go on unfolding it. It goes infinitely until we get into molecules and quarks. There's no end to the names within the names within the names. And there's no end to the change coming into being and going out of being. So this body itself and the mind, same situation. A thought comes and goes, thought comes and goes. An emotion comes and it goes, it comes and it goes. All the while, when it is there, it enjoys being. When it is there, it exists. But all of it is coming into and out of existence. Existence doesn't go anywhere. Just like the clay doesn't go anywhere in the confines of that example. Your being doesn't go anywhere. Consciousness doesn't go anywhere. Conscious being, though, is... There is no distance, and this is part of the... gives us this sense of tremendous reality in terms of the body, mind, sense organs, and the universe. There's no separation between consciousness, between the my being, which is consciousness. There's no distance or separation from my being and this body. It's not like this body doesn't enjoy being, or that I am not a conscious being. When I say I am a conscious being, the conscious being extends all the way through my body. It extends all the way through my mind, every thought, every mood, every emotion. I, the conscious being, am sad. I, the conscious being, am happy. I, am the conscious being, am this body in whatever conditions it enjoys. And so I am, in fact, the clay of the pot. I am the consciousness, the conscious being, you know, which doesn't come and go. It never comes and goes in any way. But these names and forms, or we just say names within names and with names, they're continually coming and going, coming into being and going out of being. But the being itself, they come into being and go out of being, but being doesn't come into being and go out of being. Right? I don't come into being and go out of being. And so while all of these things, the mitya, what is mitya is coming into being and going out of being. Being doesn't. And so you don't notice any change. You know, nothing's happening to you as these things are coming in and coming into being and going out of being. It's like just like had the clay coming in, becoming a pot, and then becoming a plate, and then becoming a tumbler, and then going back into a ball. From the standpoint of clayness, nothing is happening. From the standpoint of the names and forms, again, we have names within names within names. They really aren't there. That's why we say asat. They're really not there, but we experience them, and so we can't say they're non-existent. When we say they're non-existent and use the word like that, this asat, we mean like the horn of a rabbit or the son of a... These are the stock examples that we use in the Vedanta. It's like the horn of a rabbit or the flowers in the city in the sky, or the son of a barren woman. These are the three examples that they use. Where something, there is no such thing as that. It is non-existent. It never was, never will be. It's not mitya. It's never been experienced. It's zero. Okay? But this is asat also. It's asat because it itself doesn't have any separate being. Like if you take, for instance, if you take the clay pot, there is no pot there. There is only clay. There's no independent, there's no thing pot apart from the clay. And so the pot is asat, the clay is sat. The pot is that has no being of its own. What is really there is the clay. So I have to say, here now for you, what is really here is your being. That doesn't come into being and go out of being. The I am, the amness, which is consciousness. It doesn't come into being or go out of being. Nothing ever happens to you. You never notice any change in yourself. In fact, all modifications, even the growth of the body, the changing mind, all of these things take place in something which is absolutely stable. That's what we call sat. It's paramarthika satyam. It's absolutely real. So when we, the only thing that enjoys existence is existence itself, being itself. We don't think of it like that. We don't think of being, we don't think of existence as a noun. We think of it as a quality. Like, for instance, we'll say, like this lamp is, the lamp is. You know, that's all we mean by existence. The lamp is, right? Or the table is. We don't say lamp existence or table existence as though the table is the adjective, in a sense, and existence is the noun. But in fact, existence is the noun, and the existence experience is not an object. I can't say, yes, existence is a noun, look at it over there. Like I can say, the table is a noun, look at it over here. The lamp is a noun, look at here, here it is. You can say, oh, existence is a noun, look at it over here. We can't. What if I say consciousness? Consciousness is a noun, look at it over here. You can't objectify consciousness, you can't objectify existence to have a subject-object relationship with it. But if I say I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, I am actually referring by those words to something. And the something I'm referring to is me. So the amness that I experience is the existence we're talking about. It's not something that can be objectified as a lamp or a table. But it's the very being that is ever present in as my own self. And it's something that I also give to all of the objects that I experience. I give it to it in this sense. Table is, rug is, lamp is, chair is, cloth is, couch is, painting is. I could say painting exists, table exists, rug exists, you exist, my emotions exist. There is nothing. There is nothing that I experience at all that doesn't enjoy that being. It's just that the being is never something objectifiable. The being is the ground of being of everything that is. Being itself is the substance of everything I experience. It's the satyam. But the experience itself, if I'm to try to find it, I can't find it in terms of it is or you are. I can only find it in terms of I am. Right? Because that is really the ground of being, and it's the ground of being of everything, including this body, mind, sense organs. And so what is the personal experience in terms of what language do you use in terms of your self-experience? It's I am, it's not I is, right? It's I am. So if you say I am, what is the I am referring to is your own being, and that being is consciousness. Now, in reference to this I am, in reference to everything that you're looking at, that you're perceiving, it's this amness, which is now, because of language, called isness. Amness is called isness. in reference to the objects that I experience, that I can objectify, right? So, but in terms of experience, there's only amness. So let's just think about it. If I look at that couch there, I should just say the couch am, not the couch is. But that doesn't, you know, I mean, we have our rules of language, so we say the couch is. But there is no is experience. There's only one experience, and that is the amness. So either I'm going to say I is and the couch is, or I am and the couch am. There's no, because my being is not something that can be objectified. And the amness that I am, when I say I exist, is consciousness. I can't remove. Consciousness is the other thing that can't be objectified. I can't remove my existence from consciousness, because then consciousness wouldn't exist, or existence would be inert, right? And that can't happen either. I can't say I'm a non-existent conscious being, and I can't say that my existence is inert. The existence is non-objectifiable. The amness is non-objectifiable. Means I can't look at it in a subject-object relationship. I can only be it. And that being is not inert. I am a conscious being. And consciousness also cannot be objectified. I can't, oh, look at the consciousness. This is what it is. See this lamp? This is a lamp. This is consciousness. It's not like that. So the consciousness that I am is the existence that I am. And so now here, what he's saying here is that Spurinam, the consciousness, my conscious, the conscious being that I am, which is Satatmakam, which is Sat, that is what shines, right? Having as though entered into, now we're just talking kind of metaphorically, a situating, abiding in, I'll say, the consciousness which is Sat, which is abiding in all of these names and forms that we experience. That is how it shines. Now, so what does that mean? Like if I take this table, for me, this table is, it exists, there's the Sat, it is, and it is known. This is, and it is known. The is known is the chit, is the consciousness. The is the Sat. The table is, it exists, and it is known. What gives it the known experience? The known experience belongs where? Consciousness. I'm not objectifying knownness. I'm objectifying the table. But the table is known. Why? Because of consciousness. So this is, and it is known. This is, it is known. This is, it is known. The thought is, it is known. The emotion is, it is known. The ahankar, the I notion is, it is known. There is nothing that, nothing at all, ever, at any time, that is away from is and is known. So that is and is known is the Sat Chit, which shines in the form of this creation. Just like you can say, in the clay shines in the pot. Right? Sat Chit shines in the whole creation. But this, because the whole creation has Sat Chit, consciousness which is being, for itself. That is what is actually here. What causes all of the confusion is what we call the Dehatma Buddhi. The Dehatma Buddhi means that conviction that I am the, we can say all of this is Sat, you know, all of this exists and I exist, but I am a conscious being. This is what really creates the Maya. All of this is, right? And we all would say it. All of this is, my mind is, my thoughts are, my feelings are. But I am a conscious being, and the rug isn't. So I don't experience, I experience myself as a conscious being, and because of my subtle body, you can say, the sense of touch, which goes all through this body, I am a conscious being, the space isn't. Right? The clothes aren't. I am the conscious being. You are a conscious being. But in between us is inertness. So consciousness, inert consciousness. So now, I suppose, you see, if in this whole room, it was not just it all is, but my subtle body pervaded the room, so then I can say, this is my conscious being. The conscious being doesn't end here, it includes the room. Or say it doesn't end here, the consciousness doesn't end here from my experience as a jiva. In fact, it encompasses the whole creation, right? Say my sense of touch, just make a little imagination here, my sense of touch, instead of just stopping here, it actually extended for the whole creation, into the whole creation. And then I would say that I am all of this. I am this and all of this. Right? Because my sense of touch expands here. It doesn't just stop here. And so then I would be like Ishwara, or I would be Ishwara, because I would have that sense that I am the whole. But the trickery is that the subtle body, you know, which as though reflects awareness, only stops here. And so I as though have awareness and then inertness. Right? Now, what you have to understand that isn't really true. If we think of it like this, what we have, and everybody agrees, is that there is a continuum of isness. Everything has sut. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. No problem. But we only think of consciousness in terms of me, the knower. Right? Consciousness in terms of the body. Consciousness we think of as the knower, the conscious being, who is a knower, who is conscious of. That's our conditioning, because through my sense organs, I know the world. Right? Through my sense organs, I know the world. With my mind, using my sense organs, you know, I know the world. Then from the standpoint of my mind, I am a knower, I am a feeler, I am a thinker, right? So we think of consciousness as always consciousness of knower, thinker, feeler, like that. But actually, the experience, if we analyze the experience, that isn't really what the experience is. What the experience is one of known. Consciousness is manifest, the manifestation, not manifest not as coming into manifestation, but the nature of consciousness is that of knownness. So let me give you an example. If I say, this is, this is, this is, this is, this is, this is, I can also say, and everybody is in agreement with this, I'm sure, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. Nothing new so far. But the body is also known. Just like this is known, the physical body is known. Okay. Not only that, the sense organs are known. The body is known. My sense organs are known. Whether they work or not, you know. Are all five sense organs working for you? Yes, my hearing as I get older is slowly going, and my eyes are starting to dim a little bit, you know. But they're all still working. They're all still functional. And then my brother would say, well, mine aren't all functional because I lost my sense of smell. Somebody else might say, well, I lost my sense of touch in my little finger for some reason. You're very aware. So all of these things are known. Physical body is known. Sense organs are known if they're working. Mind is known. Are your thoughts known? Yes, my thoughts are known. So we just don't usually use this word. Yes, the thoughts are known. Are your emotions known? Oh, definitely the emotions are known. Right? Are your imaginations known? Yes, they are known. Is the I thought known, the ahankara? I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Yes, that is known. Are all your memories known? Yes, they are known. Is there anything, you know, that comes into your mind or into your experience that is not known? No, it's all known. So if you look at it, like this wall is known, the space is known, the body is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, the thoughts are known. Now what about you, the conscious being? Is that known? Of course, I am known. I am known. I'm a conscious being. I am here. I am known. Is there anything in your experience away from known that is not known? No, everything in my experience is known, including my body, my mind, my sense organs. Knownness is consciousness. So we only think I'm the knower, you're the known. That doesn't count because you're known, you're not consciousness. No, consciousness gives the knownness to absolutely everything, including the body, the mind, the sense organs, and everything that makes you an individual. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is known. Now, say you get rid of, just for the moment, we get rid of the pot from the clay. We just get rid of all of the namas, all of the names and forms that are enjoying this knownness. Just get rid of all of them, and what is left is the knownness that is non-objectifiable, which is what we call spudanam, or consciousness, chit, you know, chaitanya, chit. All of these are just, you know, words, awareness. That's what it is. When we say that chit, consciousness, is self-evident, the satchit is self-evident, means we say in Sanskrit, it's swetta siddha, self-evident, or swaprakashitvam, self-luminous. What does that mean? It means that it's known, not as an object, that requires subject-object relationship, but which is self-shining. What is self-shining? Is knownness itself. Now you see, is there any experience that is away from knownness? Now look at the illusion here. You look like this. Your mind, the thought in your mind, say you think of an apple, you have an apple thought in your mind. That thought is known. Right? You have a thought of an apple. That thought is known. Now, where is the knower? The thought is known. Where is the knower? What happens is actually, because the knownness is self-evident, right? That the knownness of the apple is the self-evident consciousness. But now we need to make this division of knower known, okay? And I take on to myself as a jiva, the knower, and I give the object the known. Because I'm not going to say, sitting here as a conscious being, from my experience, and the rug being unconscious and the apple being away from me, I'm not going to say, I am an apple. Right? I'm not going to say that. I eat the apple. I'm aware of the apple. I have a subject-object relationship with the apple. Why? Because my sense organs perceive the apple, and the apple is an object just as this is an object. I'm not going to say, I am the table. Either. I put the apple on the table. I take the apple off the table. I'm not the apple, I'm not the table, I'm not the rug either. From the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs. Right? And that is true. From within the Maya, there's all of these objects. And they're all different from each other. I'm not the rug, I'm not you, I'm not the apple, I'm not the chair. I'm not these clothes, but I won't say that about this body. I am this body. Right? Because consciousness, this body gets a certain, because of the subtle body, reflecting consciousness, it gets to identify with consciousness. And when it's identified with consciousness, it becomes the knower, because I have sense organs and a mind which reflects consciousness. But when we analyze the experience, everything, including the body, the mind, the sense organs, and the chair, equally enjoy knownness. They're all known. There's nothing away from knownness. The knownness stops at knownness itself, which is consciousness. Knownness and consciousness are the same thing. You see what I mean? It's like, if I move this, and now I say this thing is known. Now, you know, this microphone stand is known to me. It's known. If I take this and move it behind me, now what happens is now whatever is in front is known. See what I mean? This is known right now. I get rid of this, and then whatever is here is still known. No, nothing ever happens to known. It's just the objects are continually replaced. Knownness remains. So I might as well say, consciousness remains. Consciousness is the stable, is what is stable. It never changes. It is what is. Consciousness is. Everything else comes and goes in consciousness. including this body. This body comes and goes in consciousness. Nothing happens to consciousness. It's just that now there's a different scene which is manifesting there. But the knownness remains. That's the consciousness. And so what happens in the end for Jivan Mukta, for somebody who has knowledge, the ahankara, you know, that only identifies really with the mind and the sense organs, and then there's the subject and the body, that ahankara now identifies itself with the consciousness itself, not the knower. If the knower comes from, this knower is the ahankara, it's nothing but a thought that comes and say you have a thought of sadness, for instance. You have a sad thought. The ahankara comes in, boom. And it says, I am sad. My being, so this part is all Brahman. My being, my conscious being, I, the conscious being, am sad. That's the ahankara. The first part is correct. The conscious, it's only labeling consciousness. There's no objectifiable consciousness. You know, for the I am to come and then find a consciousness to identify with, there's no objectifiable consciousness. I am the consciousness. And so this says, I am the conscious being. True. Perfect. And I am sad. So now, it's viewing consciousness only as identified with the mind. And so whatever thought is going on in the mind, it's going to the ahankara, will have the I am thought, and then but take on whatever the mind is doing, the mind and the sense organs are doing. What if the mind is associated with the sense organs and looking at the picture? Then I am, right? Looking at the picture. Eyes are perceiving the picture. Mind is associated with the eyes. So now I am looking at the picture. But none of that's really happening. It's happening on one level, but on another level, the picture is known, the space is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known. The ahankara is coming and making this seer-seen division by identifying the conscious being that I am with the mind and the sense organs, and then I become a jiva. I become an individual. But in reality, there is only me, and everything enjoys me equally. Is known. Never a waver. The whole manifest creation is known. That is Ishwara. The whole creation is known. Ishwara doesn't have an identification with an upadi, with the body, mind, sense organs, not with anything particular in the creation, no identification. And so that means that the whole creation exists, is equally enjoying is-knownness from the standpoint of Ishwara. From the standpoint of an individual, because you have mind and sense organs, you're part of that whole creation, you have the sense of limitation, because the part is limited. But for Ishwara, if there's no identification with the part, then the sat-chit is reflected in the entire creation as it is in reality. Right? The jiva is the one that cuts up the pie. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, the entire creation enjoys me, the sat-chit. So I am the whole. That is the reality of the whole thing. But this now has to be the jiva has a lot of work to do to get to that recognition. But just think about it in your dreams. So you have a dream. Sometimes you're Ishwara of the dream because you're not identified with anything in it. You may even have taken a body in the dream, but you're still witnessing the dream, not from identification with the body or any other bodies. You're just the Ishwara of the dream. You're the whole. Right? Sometimes you're identified with the body in the dream, and you're looking at the dream from within the dream, looking out of your sense organs. So now you're a jiva in the dream. Sometimes you're not a jiva in the dream. Sometimes you're just the whole dream. That's the difference. Ishwara, jiva. In reality, you're only Ishwara. This the identification with the jiva is a false identification. Because Satchit, your being, is never identified with anything, in fact. Even for Ishwara, Ishwara is not going to say, I'm Ishwara, in the sense not going to say, I am this Maya manifestation. Ishwara will say, I'm Brahman, and this whole infinite Maya manifests and goes into unmanifest, manifests, unmanifests, nothing ever happening to me. I'm the Satchit of the entire creation. Now the jiva has to be able to say that, I'm the Satchit of the entire creation, not just of this. Because that's the reality of it. The Satchit, the conscious being that you are, is in no way ever limited by anything, in fact. Everything comes and goes. It's like the pot. You know the clay pot? It doesn't have any. So there's nothing there except for clay. Here, there's nothing here of any substance except for consciousness. Now, when you have a dream or an imagination, that's very clear. Like when you have the dream, the whole dream universe is there. The alarm goes off, the dream goes away, and nothing happens. Nothing happens because nothing happens. You know, if you get rid of the pot, nothing, zero zip, happens to the clay. Nothing. Because the pot isn't there. It's there and it's useful, but it isn't there. It's a set. The only thing that's there is clay. Here, the only thing is here is consciousness, is me. Nothing ever happens to me. Nothing at all. All the change and whatnot, the coming and goings, you know, come and go, and I just remain exactly the same. Just, it's just so simple. Like if I take this and put it behind me, this is not known, and now the rug that was in that space being blocked by this is known. Nothing happens to the knownness. Nothing, zero. That's the reality. And so now here he says in the second line, Sakshat Tattvamasi Iti Veda Vachasa Yaha Bodhiyati Ashritan. He says, he who teaches this, because this is all to Dakshinamurti, right? It's all Namaskar to Dakshinamurti. He says, the one who Bodhiyati teaches Ashritan, his devotees, those who are that have taken refuge in him. So the one who teaches Bodhiyati Ashritan, the ones who have taken refuge in him, his disciples, his students, his devotees, then how does he teach? By the words of the Veda, Veda Vachasa. What are the words of the Veda? Tat Tvamasi. You are that. He teaches Sakshat. Now when he say he teaches Sakshat, Tat Tvamasi, what that means is he teaches you that you are that. It's not, it's Sakshat. Sakshat means he makes you see it directly, immediately. The fact, you are that, has to come directly into your vision, into your immediate recognition. You know? Like if somebody walks in the room and introduces themselves to you, that person is now Sakshat. That person has come directly to you. So that it's not an indirect knowledge where somebody's describing or telling you about so-and-so. That's not Sakshat. Sakshat is when the person comes into the room, is introduced to you, you recognize them, they're right there for you to directly, immediately experience. So now here, the one who teaches the Mahavakya of the Vedas, you know, he teaches through the words of the Vedas, which means the Upanishads. The Vedanta is the Upanishads. It's a pramana. It's a teaching methodology. So the one who teaches this to give the direct recognition that you are that, that you are that Satchit, which is the very being of all experience, right? So the one who makes his students see that directly, and then what else he says? And that one, the one who is the Satchit of all, and shines as the very Satchit of all of these of all of these perceptions, of all of these nama rupas, who makes his students see that you are that directly, immediately recognize the truth of that, then yet sakshat karanat bhavet napunaravritihi bhavam Bhavam Bonidal. This bhava means samsara. Amba Nidal means the ocean, this ocean of samsara. So he says, again, avratihi, rebirth, coming back into this big for ocean. It literally means a big reservoir of water. That's what he says. Amba means water. Nidal means this big reservoir. So the one who, that's a word for an ocean. So this into this ocean of samsara, transmigratory existence, the ocean of samsara, which is mitya, means the coming into being and going out of being of everything. This bhava means coming into being. Everything in the creations, everything. The creation itself comes into being, goes out of being. Every object in the creation is coming into being, going out of being. That's bhava. Continually coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. We call it samsara. So that which keeps moving is samsara, samyak saraha. That which keeps moving on and on and on. So in this into this ocean of samsara, punar avritihi na bhavet. This coming back into the samsara is something that doesn't occur anymore. For who? Because of what? Because of the sakshat karana of whom? Because of the direct knowledge. Sakshat karana means making immediately known. Like somebody coming into the room, that person is making themselves immediately known. So because of the making immediately known of whom, there is an end to the samsara. There's no return of the jiva into samsara once that knowledge is there. When this body drops, then there is no more identification with the jiva anymore for you. Because it's a false identification. So for you, when the body drops, then you are the whole. You are Ishwara. That's what it amounts to. You are Brahman with this maya that cyclically, infinite manifest knowledge that comes and resolves. You are the Brahman with whom that has this maya capacity. That's the reality anyway. That's really who you are anyway. Even when you're identified with this, you still are the whole. Even though, you know, this upadhi is suffering from ignorance. But from the standpoint of the reality, you are Brahman, you know, which has this maya, which cyclically manifests as a creation. So what they say here is that when, because of this knowledge being direct, because of the self being directly immediately known, there is an end to the samsara, because you know who you are. The ajnana that caused the false identification is gone. And so salutations, this salutation is to him who is in the form of my guru, who is in the form of my teacher, who is Sri Dakshinamurti, who is in the form of the teacher. Sri Dakshinamurti is considered the first guru, Shiva, you know, in the manifestation of the creation. Who is the first teacher is Dakshinamurti, is there with the Chinmudra. You know, and so that sampradaya of the Dakshinamurti continues on in the form of every teacher, actually. Because the sampradaya, what Dakshinamurti is Brahman, right? Dakshinamurti is Brahman. And what Dakshinamurti is teaching is Brahman, is you are Brahman. Right? And so what is every teacher teaching? Is exactly what Dakshinamurti is teaching, or they're not teaching. They're teaching something else. But what Dakshinamurti is teaching, the Sampradaya, that Guru Sisha, Guru Sisha, Guru Sisha, like lighting a candle to a candle flame, to a candle flame, to a candle flame, the knowledge that is being passed down is exactly the same. So you can say that Dakshinamurti now is in the form of my teacher, to him my salutations. Then he says, the recognition of whom? Because Dakshinamurti is Brahman. You are Brahman. Your teacher is Brahman. The difference is that you may not know you're Brahman. The teacher knows. And so the teacher has to make you know that you are Brahman. It's not giving a lecture on Brahman. That is not Vedanta. Vedanta is not giving a lecture on Brahman. Vedanta is the sampradaya that makes you recognize what the teacher knows. And what the teacher knows is, I am Brahman, I am the whole. Then when you know that you are Brahman, you are the whole, then that's sakshat karana. That's the passing of this knowledge as what we call aparoksha jnanam. Aparoksha jnanam means The knowledge is direct and immediate. Right? You see, I am Brahman. Then that's what it is. It's not there is a Brahman, and the Shastra says, I am that. It's that I am that. That's what we mean by Sakshat. That's what the Upanishad is. That's what this teaching is. Otherwise, it's not Vedanta. It's not Vedanta at all, actually. It's a lecture on Vedanta. This is very different. So that's enough. Let's take a moment. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurukyo Namaha Hari Om.
The word ahankara.
Ahankara.
It aham.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
Kara.
Kara is like action.
No, it means like making an I, creating an I. Like the ahankara is the identification as of Brahman of the self with something. So you make this into me. You make this into an I. So we call it. We translate it as the I notion. So I'm just called the I notion or the I thought. It's notional. Right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just a hum. You know, a hum is I am Brahman. But if you say I am the body, that's the ahankara. You made the body into the I.
And frequently the identification with the body is accompanied by a sense that I am doing, I am acting.
Oh, yeah. Then we say that as long as there is identification with the body-mind, then I become what they call karta. And bhokta. Swamiji would be saying this all the time, karta bhokta. Karta means I am a doer. I'm a doer. Bhokta, I am an enjoyer. So I do, and often we mean like this, I do actions, and that's the karta, and I enjoy the fruits of those actions. It means like I experience the fruits of those actions. Karta bhokta. So to be a karta bhokta, you have to be identified with the mind, with the mind-body complex. Because the self is not karta bhokta. The self doesn't do anything, and it doesn't experience the fruits of action either. You need the mind and the sense organs to be engaged in this doership and enjoyership. If you think of the dream, you know, it's the dream character that does, that walks, that sees, that hears, that experiences the fruits of their actions. Now that belongs to the dream character within the dream. When you wake up from the dream, you didn't have anything to do with any of that, right? So awareness is not awareness of something, right? You need the mind. If the mind is there reflecting awareness, then whatever is going on in the mind is known, you know, is known. But if you get rid of the mind, then what is left is the is-knownness without the mind. So the consciousness without the mind, but it's consciousness, not your consciousness, not consciousness of something. For there to be that duality, you have to have a mind and sense organs. You kind of have to be within the maya. Or from Ishwara's standpoint, the whole manifest creation enjoys sattva. Sattva, rajas, and tamas, but sattva is pervasive, rajas is pervasive, tamas is pervasive. The sattva allows for the sense of self in the creation, right? A reflection, with a kind of hard words to use, but you have to understand those words. In when you are safe, we slow down the relationship with your mind in meditation. When a thought rises, the thought itself shines in consciousness. It is known. When the thought goes, though, the consciousness remains. But because the thoughts are sattva, if we were to break down the maya, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, the thoughts and the sense organs are sattva. That means that they manifest consciousness, or they reflect consciousness. So any thought that comes, that thought shines, right? But it's really consciousness as though reflected, even though it's not quite the perfect word, in consciousness, you know? Yeah. And so whatever thought is there shines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Okay. If you have a sense of limitation or of some kind of constriction,
yeah.
Does that indicate that there's something wrong in your identification, or how do you handle that?
Oh, see.
That event.
The body is limited, and there's the sense of touch, the subtle body, sukshma-shariya, goes through this whole body. So you have the experience of being this body, and it is limited. Mm-hmm. You have the experience of the thoughts of your mind, not somebody else's mind. Mm-hmm. Painful thoughts are painful, right? Happy thoughts are happy. So then you have the experience, this is a painful thought, this is a constricted thought. Whatever type of thought it is, that experience is there. So it's nice as you gain knowledge, and I would say more than, as you gain vairagya, the mind loses its painful constrictedness. Because as I gain vairagya, you know, that certain dispassion where it's fine when it's here and it's fine when it's not, then when the mind doesn't care, it's like, I want this, but if I don't get it, I'm fine. That's what Swamiji will call a non-binding desire. And so we as human beings, we have desires. I want to do this, I want to do that. That is part of your prarabdha karma. That's part of being human. That's no problem. Otherwise, you just sit as a lump or just sleep all the time. But you have to have something to push you forward, and that's in the form of desire. No problem. But the problem is when the desire is binding, means I have to have this in order to be happy. That's a binding desire. A non-binding desire is I want this, I do whatever is driving me to achieve that. But if I don't get it, I'm fine. It's not like my ananda or my fullness is associated with that. That's vairagya, you know. That gives the mind some freedom, right? Because it's not getting all tense about whether or not this is going to happen in the way I want it to happen. That doesn't mean that I don't try. But I am in relationship with Ishwara. That's what the whole Karma Yoga Buddhi is. I have a relationship with Ishwara. I do my duty, whatever that is. Whatever I'm impelled to do within Dharma, I consider that, you know, that's my duty. That's my prarabdha. I do that. And I accept the results as prasada, that prasada buddhi. That gives some freedom and a lack of that sense of constriction. Even though the mind is constricted, I mean, I have this thought and then this thought, and this thought is different from this thought. I mean, the whole upadi is constricted, but I'm not suffering.
So you should still have the sense of limitation or limits, but it's not binding.
Well, there's two things.
I mean, it doesn't vanish, the sense of limits.
The sense of the body being limited, the sense of the mind being limited, of your perceptions being limited, of your knowledge being limited, all of these limitations belong to the upadi. That's how it is. It's not like you're gaining knowledge and the upadi becomes limitless. It doesn't. But all the while, you are limitless. Your being is limitless, always will be limitless, is never touched by the upadi at all. So you are the one, as Atma, which is Brahman, you are limitless, and that is aparoksha. That is always recognized. That's your being, and that ajnanam is gone. So the limitlessness of yourself is the constant. the limitations of the upadi are constant also.
Yeah.
Right? Because they are limited. They need not be causing you pain. I mean, the body is going to get old and wretched and die, and whatever it does, whatever your karma is for that. And that's, you know, that's the nature of the body. So there'll be physical pain of some sort there as you go through life. Emotional pain becomes less and less and less as the vairagya increases. Where, you know, you do your best. Like Swamiji says that, I know I say this many times but because it was also helpful to me. He goes, I do what is in front of me every day to the best of my ability. That's all. It's not really looking forward into the future. Sometimes the future is here right now to make a decision about because it's time. But that's here in the present. He just does, you know, what is given to him to do to the best of his ability over and over and over and over again till the prarabdha runs out. That's what it is. And it's more than that, you know. You have the dharma. The dharma means to the best of my ability, I do moment to moment what is being asked of me. What Bhagavan is asking of me. And it's that really literally that simple. And if that's what I do, then the results, I don't have control over the results. You know? Otherwise I would be Ishwara. I could say, I will do this and this will be the result. Nobody can say that. You can say, I will do this and this is the result I'm expecting, and you'll always know, and I don't know if that will work out or not. That's the truth of it. That's why in that, where Ishwara says, where Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, your adhikara, your qualification, is in the karma, in the action. That's what you can do. But only I am the giver of the fruits of action, not you. So then he says, don't take yourself to be a karmapala hetu. What that means is, don't think that you are the one who is the cause of the karmapala. That's me, you know. And then he says, and don't let that make you not want to do karma. Because you think I'm the karmapala hetu, you don't have any control over it, okay, I'm not going to do anything. No, don't do that.
Just give me results.
Yeah. So don't do that. You just do the karmas that are there. As a jiva, you know, the prarabdha karma, you do the karmas that are there to be done and accept the results of those karmas as prasad from Bhagavan. Then you're in relationship to Bhagavan, okay, this is what you're giving this time. And if you still say, as a jiva, you still say, but I wanted something else, so I'm going to try again. You say to Bhagavan, okay, you gave me this, but I was really wanted this, I'm going to try again. And then he says, gives back whatever. And then you say, no, that's not what I wanted, I'm going to try again. And after a while you say, okay, whatever. You have that karma prasada buddhi, you know? He said, in a relationship. And what your attachment is not so much really to the results, but to your own doing of doing your duty in dharma and then accepting the results as prasad from them. It gives a whole different attitude that gives shanti. You know, until somebody, and that's for the mumukshu, you know, who's gaining nishta. That's a very, very helpful attitude. And that will resolve, that actual prasada buddhi resolves into the recognition that the whole thing is Ishwara. This body is Ishwara, the karta is Ishwara, the bhokta is Ishwara. There's nothing that's not Ishwara. And I, in fact, do nothing. That's the truth of it. That's the truth of it. And then there's a... But then you recognize that, and the same thing, I just do the best here as this jiva, I do the best that I can from moment to moment to moment. You know? And it's not so that I can be full or that I can become happy or that I'm expecting to get some my ananda. It's just, I already am that, right? But I have this body. And I'm a participant in this creation, so participate and be engaged according to your karma. But don't have that be those Don't have it be binding. Don't have your desires be binding. That's the vairagya. Vairagya is not this keep away from me. It's that, you know, it's like they use the example of the helium balloon for a child is much different. The child loses their helium balloon. That is a much different experience, usually, than if adult loses it. If an adult loses their helium balloon, then you say, oh, look at that, there it goes. You know, that's its own.
Maybe the balloons experience. Just change. So for the adult, it's just becomes a different balloon. I mean, it's not about the balloon anymore, but it becomes suddenly their car or their their house. Or,
but with that example, it's that everything becomes a helium balloon for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the example.
You're easy to let go.
Mm-hmm. The example is like for a child, mm-hmm. the helium balloon, when it is lost, which invariably it will be, you know, it is very upsetting. But for an adult, because there's vairagya toward that, okay, it's gone. That was fun. That is fun. It's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So when everything's like a helium balloon for you, that's vairagya. Well, the point, though, is that the vairagya isn't about you have to keep away. It's not that. We do keep things away. Say you have an addiction towards something, or you're hanging out with people that are not a good influence on you, not helpful. Then initially we'll keep away from those people just to protect us from trying to break bad habits or something like that, you know. But in the end, the vairagya is that if it's here, that's fine, and if it's not here, that's fine.
So just to kind of challenge that perspective, you know, it makes total sense what you're saying. But for example, you know, you're in a relationship and you know, things get really difficult, and you maybe, if you now apply the virus, I mean, I know there's an underlying propta karma that's underlying everything, so we don't need to address that specific issue, because I'm clear that that's kind of a driving force. But let's say, so you're in a relationship and it becomes really difficult, then, you know, the vairagya might actually... Isn't there a possibility that the vairagya can also perpetuate because of the non-identification with what's going on in a certain way, and the non-attachment that's applied to the situation lead to a rather kind of... disengaging kind of, you know what I mean, psycho-emotionally disengaging process with what's actually right in front of you, which might be exactly what you have to learn, but you can only learn it by engaging in it. But now the vairagya might also pull you in the other direction, which just means, wow, it's just falling apart. You know, let's just accept that this is just kind of what's happening. So it seems like, you know, when the tire hits the road, so to speak, you know, in this kind of life experience, that's a kind of a very kind of tight rope to walk on, you know, because it's like, you know what I mean?
Well, what if you think of it more like the vairagya,
mm-hmm.
instead of being like dispassion is also, I think, kind of a misleading word, because dispassion means
mm-hmm.
I'm just not really interested.
Right.
So that's not what it is. It's not that I'm not interested,
mm-hmm.
but it means that I can be objective in the situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I can be engaged in the situation really because I'm free inside. If the situation goes this way, I can be objective with that. If it goes this way, I can be objective with that. I have a freedom to let things go. If I don't have a freedom to let things go, then I become very... it becomes really painful,
mm-hmm.
these situations. You know, but I don't think... If you think of dispassion as I'm not really interested in you, that's not vairagya.
Mm-hmm.
That's I'm not interested in you.
Yeah.
That's different than vairagya. Vairagya means that I can be present with what is,
mm-hmm.
without mm-hmm. myself losing my wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that that can be kind of irritating to people.
So. Oh, yeah, that is extremely irritating.
No, it can be in the sense that I'm not engaged in the world in the same way that another person may be engaged in the world, because I'm not engaged in the world so much that in the sense that I kind of lose my sense of well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain objectivity. Now, by objectivity, though, I don't mean I'm seeing people as objects. I don't mean that by objectivity. Mm-hmm. I mean that I can be present to the situation without a lot of projection, you know?
Isn't there also, like, in Vyagra, discernment and wisdom, I mean, factors of that? I mean, knowing when to go towards something and knowing when not. You know, I see it more like having that trust that I know in these moments which path do I would take, coming from a place of wisdom and understanding.
Yeah, and your emotional system isn't totally being dragged through the... through the coals. There's a self there. What if you just say it simply, yourself is still there and yourself is holding the situation and the self isn't getting dragged through anything? Yeah.
But it's okay. I think it's a very delicate, because I think it can be very hard sometimes to look through that actually in practice. Because sometimes it might just be when it really takes you down, psycho-emotionally, for example,
mm-hmm.
that might be exactly where you need to go. And so I think when that happens, they can also, even with the discernment on board, there might be a possibility to misinterpret that, you know?
I understand what you're saying. It's kind of like emotional bypass.
Yeah, exactly.
But when they're talking about...
Uh-huh.
That's true.
Yeah.
But when they're talking about vairagya, and say we're trying to say, what is vairagya?
Mm-hmm.
What is that like?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like they use the helium balloon example.
Mm-hmm.
Means I have a freedom in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, that freedom in the situation isn't going to be there to the degree that I'm attached to the situation. That means in that situation, there isn't vairagya.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there isn't vairagya, then I'm getting, you know, emotional. I've got a lot of emotions that are taking place in reference to that situation. You have vairagya in this situation, in this situation, in this situation, but not in that situation. Now, when that's the case, there's a lot of emotional stuff going on. And everywhere that there's no... that vairagya isn't there, then there's this emotional pull when the person isn't acting in the way that I want them to and all of these different things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then you can emotionally bypass by dissociating.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Oh, what's the right way?
Yeah, vairagya isn't...
What's the right way?
When there's this emotional pull, then you have to be with the situation and work it out and bring your knowledge in and try to deal with all of those feelings and emotions without an emotional bypass. You can't say, you can't have an attachment and then say, let me have vairagya toward this. And use it as a dissociative technique.
But I think what you're saying is very valuable in terms of that can very easily be misinterpreted by the other party as you disengaging, because there's a certain kind of, you know, meeting that takes place. And so when one person is more like, has that perspective of the vairagya perspective, that can very easily be felt and experienced by the other one as you're actually disengaging, you know.
Yeah, but now the thing is...
And that can even bring in more... amplification of the whole situation also.
Yeah, but...
So there's a backdoor
but I don't agree completely with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what happens is that there is disengaging, and that's not what I mean by vairagya. like, for instance, I like to use Swamiji as an example for these things, because I never feel when I'm with him that there's a disengaging. I feel there's an objectivity, and that no matter what I do, he will be fine. I know that. You know, and that what I do is not going to bring him down. I'm sure of that. It's obvious. It's an obvious thing. But I never feel unloved. I never feel disengaged from. I feel somebody who is totally present. You know, so that's the difference. Totally present and full and complete, whole, loving, all of these type of things, and totally there for me. But I know that when I go away, or if I say some mean thing or whatever, he will still be the same. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? There's a difference there. There's no dissociation. And so I think that sometimes as a defense, and just the way we take care of ourselves, because we're in the process of maturing, there is dissociation, and there is just a kind of a shutting down in a way. And maybe not feeling anything because you don't have any feelings because you're just pulling away, to, you know, just to get some space. But what if there's no pulling away?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that you're fine. You are fine with dealing with this person, your partner or whoever, in the way that they are. And if they're raging or angry and they run out and they slam the door, it's not as though you have to pull in and disengage. More, it's something more like that.
Mm-hmm.
You see the difference?
Yeah, yeah, no, I get your point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vairagya, in the end, spiritual maturity and all of these words that we use, is really Vairagya.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't start out with Vairagya. You come to this knowledge because you have enough viveka, that discrimination between what's real and what isn't, or what is lasting and what is not lasting. You see that nothing is lasting, and therefore nothing can really give me the ananda or fullness I'm seeking. That's viveka. That viveka leads to a vairagya, where you say, these things don't have the capacity to really take care of me by their very nature. That's vairagya. So you know that. But there's a huge emotional lag time to really own that up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the areas that matter. You know, and, I mean, we have perfect vairagya toward 99.99% of the things in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But then that leaves a lot of your personal life, you know, say there's five things. That's a lot, right? Five things that...
Mm-hmm.
So we go on maturing and maturing and maturing as you become more... as your mind settles down and becomes much more used to depending upon your own being for that steady wholeness that you are.
So when you do trip up like that, in those occasions, what's a good procedure to use during those moments to know my well-being is elsewhere, or how can you deal with both simultaneously?
Well, I mean, one is to kind of pull your mind back to the reality of yourself so that you at least have yourself there present to the discord, you know. You know, and then just try to hold that pain and be able to recognize it for what it is, not to run away from it, or not to run away from the other person, not to run away from the situation, but to be present to it, you know, and be present to it in the light of your knowledge. And then we have all this inner child work and things that we do to take care of the little one inside who's getting triggered by all of that. So there's different levels of things that we do. But the first thing is trying to get myself back so that I can actually be with that situation. You know, be with myself, my mind and my partner or whatever it is in a more objective way. Mm-hmm. And then do that inner child work or do those meditations where I see myself with the other person. That's really can be so useful. Like I see myself with the other person and I look at exactly what has happened and then I see why it has happened, I go back cause and effect, you know, to see this happened to this to me, and then this led to this, led to this, led to this, that led me to right here, and for my partner, this had happened, and this had happened, and this had happened, you know, that led him or her to be there, and that situation produced this. And I see that kind of whole thing as Ishvara, and so I understand it. So there's different things that we do just to objectify the whole situation. So it's not just me, it's not just my partner, it's this cause-effect thing that has led up to this situation. And then you see all of this together produces this emotion, this emotional mire that we are in now. That's all Bhagavan. These are all the laws. And so then you can ask, after you see all of that, the whole thing, you give the whole thing to Ishvara, because the whole thing is Ishvara, and then you can ask yourself, what can I do to break this? What could I contribute to break this?
Yeah.
You know, but that's, then we're working with the actual.
And that's not disengaging.
It's not disengaging at all. It's being really present to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of times it seems that the people who are often very, very bright, very, very skillful in their work can be a touch impatient. And relationships require a great deal of patience to hear another person and be there with
them. Yeah.
At times.
You always can be impatient over the other's limitations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not my limitations. My limitations, you should be very patient. And loving and kind. And understanding.
Yeah. I think intimate relationships are really a whole dynamic in itself.
In fact, Carl Jung, you know, he says intimate relationships are so necessary for seeing your own shadow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, then you really get to experience your own buttons. You know. But that's good if you have that understanding. You know, then you can actually use the relationship to actually work on yourself. It's hard to see your shadow. Everybody else sees it, you'll say. you don't see it, but everybody else in the room does experience it. That's why in an intimate relationship, it's good, you know, because that'll really, there's no persona there. When, you know, in an intimate relationship, the persona, kind of the polite behavior, how to be appropriate, you know, with this person, that person, kind of your persona will change depending upon the situation, just so that we can survive, you know, have a civil relationship. But then when you're in an intimate relationship, the persona just goes, you know. And then you're just dealing with all of your projections, you know, that are continually being triggered. But if you understand that, then you don't just project onto the other person and leave yourself as the pure one. You start looking at, you know, what's going on in you. So it's...
And then you still need to learn to tango.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a whole other... You know, it's like the other one's work, your work, and the work together, right?
Yeah.
So, which is like...
Challenging. Yeah, life's not very easy, is it? Let's call it a night. Pleasure.